Is it time for a mind shift? If you don't know what that means, then join your host, Dr. Clint Haycock, a former evangelical Christian pastor and Bible college teacher of over 20 years, along the journey of deconstruction and reconstruction of faith, life, religion, and spirituality.
Hey everybody, welcome to this special bonus episode featuring a great conversation between myself, Bonnie, and Karen from the Deconversion Therapy podcast. We recorded this episode a couple of weeks ago and they released part one on their platform last week. So now I'm releasing the entire episode so you can listen to the whole conversation. It's really good. It's funny. We get into all kinds of stuff like what sorts of evangelicals would you like to punch in the throat? We talk about Trumpism. We talk about crazy church stories, rapture anxiety, and more. We had an absolutely fantastic conversation. So enjoy this mind shift deconversion between myself, Bonnie, and Karen from the Deconversion Therapy podcast.
Hey guys, we are here with an interesting format for us. This is Bonnie and Karen from Deconversion Therapy, and we're going to be talking to Clint Haycock from the Mind Shift podcast and kind of doing a group broadcast, if you will. He's got a great podcast about ex-evangelicals and deconverting and a whole bunch of great interviews on his podcast that are phenomenal. So this is the first of the experiments. Say something, guys, because...
No, we're not. We're going to leave you hanging.
I just enjoy listening to you talk. It sounded so good. Just keep going.
This is Karen, and I just want to say that Clint is intelligent and thoughtful and studious, so we're going to fake intelligence and, you know... Again, I have the hand on the edit button, so if we come out looking intelligent at all, it's a trick of mirrors.
Yeah, smoke and mirrors. Well, so, I was going to say that's just the way I approach my podcast. You know, just I used to be a Bible college teacher. I was into academics big time, so that's just my orientation, I guess, is to kind of approach these topics from a little bit maybe of an academic point of view. I don't know, but... Who knows? But I'd love to have a good laugh, too. So I love your show as well, because obviously those stories that you talk about, they resonate so much with my time in evangelicalism, too. So I'm really looking forward to this conversation.
Yeah, we've got that yin-yang, you know, for anyone who needs it, because I know a lot of our followers, some of the things that they talk about with their struggles are, you know, still trying to get rid of guilt or believing hell is real and being fearful. And that's when some of the academic stuff can come in and be really helpful. And we usually point them away.
Like, somewhere
get
else.
Away and go look for some good
go
stuff.
Go look elsewhere.
That's right. That's
right. Oh my gosh, your most recent episodes about the election and cognitive dissonance, they were so dense with information. I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah, but it's all about different backgrounds and experiences. I mean, the only reason I got into those just about the prophecies, that's what I did three back-to-back-to-back episodes on the failed Trump prophecies, all these charismatic figures making all these confident predictions that Trump was going to get reelected. And once I started going down that rabbit hole, I just kept going and going. In fact, I should have done one this weekend, but I'm kind of burning out on it. So I'm glad we're doing this so we can have a laugh, because I need a break from that too.
The confidence in the prophecies, that's the most hilarious part.
I don't understand 100% certainty. What either of you are talking about, because Eric Metaxas just said Trump should go ahead and start picking his cabinet because
he won it. Yes, he did. If you discount all the millions of illegal fraudulent votes, he absolutely won in a landslide. That's what they're saying now. I mean, they're repeating his conspiracy theories. It's hilarious, but kind of sad to watch them flailing. They're trying to explain it all away, and it's, you know, it's an unbelievable storyline that's just, it's continuing even as we speak.
Right.
Right. Because for people who aren't aware of cognitive dissonance, give us the nut, you know, the brief version of what that is and how they're making it known to us. I mean, these articles are hitting all the mainstream press, too, about how his followers are victims of cognitive dissonance.
Yeah, well, that's it. And it comes from a book. It's called When Prophecy Fails. It was written back in the 50s. It's a fascinating book. I don't want to get too much into the book, but it's actually a real-life story of a group of psychiatrists, psychologists that infiltrated a cult. This really actually happened in real life, and they kind of posed as cult members as this woman was predicting the end of the world. And, of course, her prediction didn't come to pass, that these saucer people were going to come down and destroy the world and take them off to safety and all the rest of it. And they followed the whole thing. And after it was all over and she was proven to be a false prophet, the followers didn't abandon her. They actually doubled down and went dug deeper into the complete fabrication of the prophecy. And this is exactly what we're seeing now. So you're hit with what they call disconfirming evidence, something that shows clearly these prophets were wrong. But rather than admitting they were wrong, they have to reduce that feeling of dissonance. So that's what they're doing now. They're coming up with all sorts of crazy explanations as to why they weren't wrong. Yeah. So they're doubling down.
And now, I mean, we've all been in arguments like that before, but they used to be when we were younger and we're just talking with someone who does not want to be wrong, no matter what.
But these
attach it to meaning and all that. Bonnie, who was the guy we talked about that did that? The one that bought all the billboards? We did an episode. Bonnie did the research. And
he predicted one end date of the, you know, the globe, whatever, the world.
End of the world.
And then he was like, oh, crap, I messed up on my calculations, and he changed the dates.
So he punched his Casio watch again and was like,
Whoops, forgot to carry the one. Yep. Whoops.
Did but it again. Well, it was tens of thousands of dollars and tons of people who are following this. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's been so many. I mean, look at the Jehovah's Witnesses. That's probably the prime example. Over the decades, over 100 and some years ago, they were predicting the end of the world. But it hasn't destroyed the Jehovah's Witness religion. It's bigger than ever. Right. You know, so there's a classic example. When prophecy fails, they don't abandon the religion. They actually dig in deeper. And this is exactly what we're seeing now.
Yeah, and so with the election, does that make you think that, well, almost half of the people who live in the U.S. are the type of people who just can never admit they're wrong?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I know statistically, they're saying 52% of all Republicans believe that Trump actually won the election and it was a rigged system. And so they're buying, almost half of Republicans are buying into those conspiracy theories that they're spinning. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, and a great number of those are obviously Trump supporting evangelicals. So I don't know where the math comes in, but it's got to be a big number in terms of percentages.
Yeah. And Bonnie and I have talked about this before. Like, for them to think that liberals, or voters for Biden, let me say, cheated. Mm-hmm. We are not that organized.
We couldn't make it happen.
Evangelicals all watch one news source.
Yeah.
Now it's maybe going to be two. And they meet at least once a week and have some kind of online fellowship going right now where their message is dispersed. Our side is just generally a bunch of, you know, disparate belief systems and different ideals. And then that's how, you know, we got this vote going across. So we're just not that organized, but they are definitely doubling down within their communities absolutely. And, you know, where they're hearing all the bullshit. And
Where is it going to go? Yeah, that's it. Where is it going to go? That's what I'm fascinated about. Where's the whole thing going to end up? Because, well, I guess I think what it's going to do, I've already seen it. These prophets, they're actually turning around and blaming the church. They're saying, it's the church's fault. You guys were asleep. That you didn't do what we said to do. If you'd have done what we would have said to do, Trump would have won. So it's the church's fault. So it's just classic.
eating.
So when they say they didn't do what they said to do, does that mean more people vote?
Yeah, they didn't get out and vote. I heard a guy on one of these channels say that basically the church was asleep and didn't listen to the words of the prophets, and they did, and not enough evangelicals voted for Trump. If they had done what they said to told them to do, he would have won. So it's not their fault.
And is this guy recording from his car? We're getting a lot
it
of...
It could be, a lot could be of, a certain Pastor Locke, are you talking
yes.
about?
Yes, and there's a few others, and they just love to sit in their car and sort of yell their message. Rant. Yeah, I'm
I've
like,
seen
where
some
are
of
you
Locke
parked?
Stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, something that's that true. You mentioned in one of your podcasts, and I don't remember which one, I'm sorry, it was about the origin of when all of this started, when the people, I guess maybe when they were trying to get Reagan nominated or voted in, they decided, okay, this is a great bunch of people who we're going to try to mobilize into voting. Mm-hmm. And he said, you can't endorse me, but I can endorse you.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
But it goes back to when we were kids in church, and they would hand out little pieces of paper, like here's who to vote for if you want to be on Jesus's side.
And they're doing it now. I mean, voter guides, that's what they call it, isn't it? So you have groups like the Family Research Council and other groups, massive mega groups, part of the Focus on the Family, and they go out and they mobilize Christians to vote and get involved in politics. And that all goes back to, like you say, well, they were reacting against Jimmy Carter, and they turned on him, really, which is weird because he was actually an evangelical. And that's the funny thing.
Know.
He truly was a Christian.
But he wasn't a
phony. Threw him down. He was a liberal. That was the problem.
That's exactly it. I was saying that was my first partisan experience. We were in elementary school. We had to sell those damn World's Finest chocolate bars. They came out with the almond ones later.
Finest.
And knocking on doors in South Florida, where we're from. And one man said, oh, that's sweet. And what school are you from? And I'm like, Baptist school. And he said, Baptist. Jimmy Carter's Baptist. I hate Baptists. And slammed the door.
I don't want your chocolate.
And I know. I'm like, but it's the finest.
But it's good chocolate.
But
I sold that crap too, man.
Yeah. And then
fundraisers.
Ate all the ones that didn't sell. But it makes me see it in a different light now. Then I just thought, that guy is lost. You know, he's not a Christian.
Pray for him.
Yeah.
And he didn't buy your chocolate either.
Didn't buy my fucking chocolate.
Yep.
I had to eat it.
That was the most terrifying thing, is going around the neighborhood to people's doors.
It was
the
training
chocolate.
Us. It was training,
I know, it was training
us.
Us.
For, yeah,
evangelical. Training for evangelism.
That's
well,
it.
I used to send him. I'd send him to work with my dad. That was a winner because he worked at Boeing in Seattle. So he would take a big box of them, and all of his coworkers would just buy them all. You know, I'm like, sweet, it's a win-win. I'm not going door to door.
Right.
I'm sending them to work with Dad, and he'll sell them all for me.
I'll take orders. Okay, so give us a little bit about you. You grew up in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
How are there Christians in Seattle? I thought it was just...
I was the last one, I think, and I left. We got out.
So you grew up in Seattle, but now you live in North Wales in the UK.
Yes,
so how did you end up there?
We ended up here. We've been here just about almost 15 years now. I did a PhD over here, and that's what brought me over. We came across on a student visa, and so we just stayed on. Basically, we got to the 10-year point, and then we were able to apply for indefinite leave to remain, which is basically like citizenship. We could actually get British citizenship if we wanted to, but it's a lot more money. But they can't kick us out, basically, is the short version. So that's how we ended up over here.
So if you haven't been listening to certain episodes, you wouldn't have heard how Bonnie is desperate to move there. She's picked out her house. She's and now it's just...
Downton Abbey?
She's putting it out there. You went there during college, too, right, Bonnie?
I went there in college. Then I went to see a Robbie Williams concert in like 2013, and then a couple more trips recently. But I've narrowed down, like she says, my neighborhood, I've decided where I want to live and everything.
So where do you want to move to?
That leafy suburb just north of London in Hampstead. It's just so nice. But I think that the other thing that's happening there is like on 30 Rock, where you go to Cleveland and you have a great time and you want to move to Cleveland. I've only been there when it's been fantastic sunny weather. And I know that
the one day a year.
That's right. And I know that they've got like the sun comes up at 7:30 and sets at 4 o'clock in the winter about now.
It's true.
Yeah, so
it's brutal. I go to work in the dark and I come home in the dark. It's pretty rough.
Aww.
Yeah, but I have a long drive, so it gives me a chance to listen to podcasts and audiobooks and things. So I try to make it, you know, the best of it.
Right.
So what's your degree? What do you teach? What's that side of your life?
Well, my degree was in actually biblical studies, Old Testament, and preaching. So that was my aim, was to do this degree and go back into like a Bible college or seminary, environment, which I did. I taught over here in a place in Leeds and Liverpool for about 7 or 8 years, and then I deconstructed. So now I actually teach like carpentry and that kind of thing at a college over here in England. So I'm totally out of that whole theology. Ah. Obviously, I don't have anything to do with any of that
wait,
background,
except,
sort of
except
academically.
Except you do. Carpentry. But, yeah. Come on.
Hey, Jesus
come
was a carpenter.
On.
We come got on. It.
That's
you
awesome.
Yeah. That's my connection.
So give us the Reader's Digest version of like why after all of that did you figure, hey, maybe this isn't all it was cracked up to be.
Well, my story, I'll give you the super short version. I was going to Bible college and seminary in Portland, down in Oregon, and I was a pastor of a church for about 12 years. And
I really got
burned out in ministry, which is obviously a very common experience. That church actually closed not long, or just before we moved over here, about 6 or 8 months later, we moved to the UK. So I was completely burned out on the whole topic of church. I didn't want to go to church again. So part of it was me deconstructing, was getting out of the church experience, but I still very much considered myself a Christian. I was hoping to reform the church. That was part of my drive by getting back into teaching. I thought, well, I'll be able to influence whole generations of men and women coming up in ministry training with my background in church ministry to think, you know, things they can avoid and help, you know, change the church from within. But the longer I went down that line, the more I was deconstructing and the more difficulty I was having teaching the material, you know, year after year. And finally, they laid all of us off. It wasn't just me, but they laid all the staff off because the school ran out of money. And I realized now that was the best thing that they ever could have done, because I was, like I say, having a harder and harder time sort of maintaining the party line. So that was my way out of teaching anyway. But then I got a job teaching carpentry, weirdly, a few years later. So that's what I'm doing now.
Wow.
So what was like the turning point? Did you have one, or was it just the frog in the warm water that?
Yeah, it was the frog, because I can see now, even when I was a pastor, I was starting to get into progressive Christianity, which, you know, guys like Brian McLaren, Rob Bell, Donald Miller, I was reading those kind of books. And I was starting to deconstruct my fundamentalist background.
Right.
Because I was raised a total fundamentalist in the Bill Gothard stuff in the 70s and 80s. So I was ditching a lot of those dogmas sort of thing. And then that was my journey out, I guess. It took a long time. I was questioning things and jettisoning a lot of the crap that I used to believe. So by the end of it, there was nothing left. You know, it was like every piece kept sloughing off to the point where there was not much left, and there was no faith left either.
Yeah.
Wow.
But it took about 10 years, I guess, to really kind of melt it all down and shake it all out, I guess.
It really does take a long time. And a lot of our listeners, you know, who are going through difficult times, or they're coming out as non-believers and all that, of course you want to think, I will be out of this pain and questioning soon. But it really, according to how deep in you were and for how long, you're going to have that going out. You know, you're going to have.
And I think how much your parents were into it. Mm-hmm. Oh, seems right. to be a lot, because when I listened to you and your episode where you talked to your friend Jeff Judd from high school, yeah. he seems to be me, like the one who just laughs at it all and has always been kind of a little bit more removed. Like mm-hmm. Karen's parents were very much into church. My mom wasn't, but I got into going to church and bought into everything. But then I always had this kind of arm's distance thing of, well, wait a minute. Well, if you can't share yeah. the good word with a kid on an island, then really, how fair is that? And I always had the yeah. The questions like that and thought, this is a little bit something I can't say. I can't stake my life on any of this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So when you were done, your last straw, you were like done. I yeah. was similar to Clint, you know, took a lot longer.
So you were raised in it from day one like me?
I was raised in it, but unlike you, we could watch heathen television and...
Yep. We had no TV
you
at mean, all.
You right. mean we could just watch television?
Yeah. It's all heathen.
What do you do with your days if you can't watch television?
Oh, I read books when I was a kid, played outside. You know, that's what we did. Rode our bikes and did the kid things. We know, we never had a TV, so I never missed it. We could go up and watch The Muppet Show on Fridays right. from 7:30 to 8 on Fridays. And that was it at my grandmother's house. And we had to be back promptly by like 8:05 or we'd get a spanking. You right. know, so yep. that was the only TV we were allowed all week. So we never really missed it. We didn't have no. it. We never had it from day one.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
So, and but at night after it's dark, I guess you would read.
Yeah.
And I do just homework. Read books.
Did you just yeah. have to do it by a candle? Were you allowed yeah. electricity?
Yep. We had electricity, shockingly, believe it or not, even though it was Seattle. We didn't have to read by candlelight.
Yeah. Well, wow. I was, so, yeah, my parents were Christians. They were Southern Baptist. My dad had converted from nominal Catholicism. You know, did the whole thing. He was a deacon. Mm-hmm. So I grew up in that. My brother was in that and all that. And so Bonnie,
my mom, grandparents, was divorced.
Yeah. Ooh. No.
Scandalous.
They lived at the end of our street. So when we were like 1.5, we met each other. And because wow. Bonnie's mother worked, you know, my family would be like, we're going to church. Okay. So everything we did just for rides and making everything easier, Bonnie because, did. So
yeah, but we went to the same Baptist day school.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we would need to be the same place the same time. And then, of course, we kept up with the youth group in high school. And then oh, yeah. for the first 2 years of college, we went to a Baptist university affiliated with the church. And then I left and Karen
she
stayed.
Left. Right, right.
So you stuck it out, Karen.
I'm a committed person.
That's right.
I'm a Christian. Oh, I was in deep. And then I became a full-time overseas missionary after that. And then when we returned to the States, you know, things started. My husband was quicker than I was with the deconversion. He mm-hmm. had that doubt situation. I didn't, but, you know, sort of what you said is right, and I'm wondering with COVID, too, when you're out of the church physically, you begin to have a distance that makes you be able to not be as afraid and be able to look at things in a mm-hmm. different way, and that's what was happening on the mission field. And when we returned and couldn't find church, you know, that made
I think
it
that's
easier.
Why they're mm-hmm. scared to death of COVID too, because people so, are yeah. going to stay home on Sunday mornings and
exactly.
enjoy life, and exactly. they're going to stay home on Wednesday evenings, and they're not going to have anywhere to easily give money. Mm-hmm. They're scared.
They're freaking out. They're yeah. running scared. I think you're absolutely right. Because as you say, once you miss something out for that long, you start mm-hmm. to go, wait a minute, did I really need this? And in fact, I'm perhaps better off without it.
Yeah.
Shockingly, you know, and the pastor cannot have that, man. I wonder if that's some of the reason some of these guys are fighting so hard to have people come back in, even though, yeah, it's in clear defiance of all COVID protocols. They're putting people's lives at risk. It's absolutely insane. It's become a death cult. It really has.
It really has.
It's just crazy. Yeah, it has. Yeah.
And we can discuss that even more. I just turned in an article I hope will go up this week, but it sort of names a few of our favorites.
Oh, yes.
And that can actually maybe go right into our question that we were all emailing about. Which of these people would you punch in the throat if you could? And that, you know, I have ones that I would just like to look up and down and make them feel bad about themselves.
That's not possible.
Other ones I want to punch in the throat. Yeah.
None of them are going to feel bad about themselves.
I know.
Exactly.
In my fantasy.
Oh, well, you can have that. Okay.
Yeah, in your fantasy world. Maybe they'll apologize. Mm-hmm. Well, and we got some. I tweeted about this earlier just before we went on the air, and a bunch of people responded because I said, "Oh, I'm going to be talking with Karen and Bonnie, and what top five evangelicals would you like to punch in the throat?" So the list that I had, some names got added to that, and I was like, "Oh, damn it! I should have put their name on."
Was there That's a clear so winner?
Well, Sean Foyt comes up a bunch.
Pastor they took Locke. Mine. They just stole mine.
Mm-hmm. Kenneth Copeland, Paula White, Kane, Carl Lentz is a new one.
Yeah.
This scandal is just unfolding even as we speak, and there's a lot to talk about there.
I'd love to. We'll hit man. That up.
It's soon. A mess.
Yeah. So I don't know if you read it, but did you see that in, I think, the New York Post, they had an article by the woman who Carl was messing around with?
Yes. She's now coming forward, isn't she?
Yeah. She talks about the whole thing about how they met each other in a park and how she said, when he put my name in the notes section of his phone's apps instead of the contacts, I should have known something was up. Okay.
Well, Bonnie, you know how they found out about it. It was his wife, wasn't it? Because he linked somehow. He's one of these Mac guys. Everything's connected up in the cloud.
Yeah.
And he put some stuff in the iCloud or the Apple thing, and his wife found it at work. And so everybody was standing around, and that's how she's like, "Whoa, who the hell is this in his account?" This woman, and they're sending love poems and pictures back and forth, and the weird thing, you know, did you know that Hillsong's fired her too?
Yes.
Yes.
What did she do?
That's it. Bonnie and I talked about this.
She had the affair.
This. Yep. It's crazy. Patriarchy.
Yeah.
101. But Bonnie, you were saying something about how his apology didn't point out I sinned against my wife. It was like. Yep.
Against my marriage.
Yeah.
And, that was mean.
Yeah. And it's on and on. But Bonnie also pointed out that I think it is Lentz and David Koresh have the same glasses. And then I found a picture of Sean Foyt, and he is the same. And we're like, is it the glasses?
Maybe it's the glasses.
It could be the glasses.
And so does that serial killer, the one who killed his family and because they had been broke. And then he ended up having the Tiffany stained glass thing in the ceiling of his house. What was that guy? List? Mm. Is that his name?
I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he wore glasses. The same glasses. Yeah, because when they constructed this... the sculpture of his face, the guy was like, "This is the kind of glasses this jerk would wear."
And it had Sean Foyt, Carl Lentz glasses. See?
Must be the glasses. Yeah. That's the connection.
It's the connection.
Yeah.
They say we're not into conspiracy theories at
not
all.
Not at all.
Nope.
It is not the glasses. They're behind it. It's the deep state somehow, you know.
Well, I remember when I was a missionary and I was with a group and I can't remember. I was always crying and upset about, I don't feel as close to God as it seems you guys are. You're hearing words of prophecy that mention your name and go on and on, like, "Dearest Karen, I love you with all," you know, they would be writing down what God is saying to them.
Super spiritual.
But hold on, because exactly what you're saying goes into what happened with Clint. He got baptized three times.
That's true.
Oh, you had to make sure it took? Yeah.
Yep. It didn't take You're the first not alone. Two times.
No,
you,
no.
How but many I've... times did you get baptized?
One. Duh.
Oh, just once?
Yeah, it's, me just need... once too, but the doubt.
But I got the rededication and all that.
Oh, yeah.
But I remember not, you know, feeling I was as close to God as the others. And someone looked at my wrists and said, "Where'd you get that leather bracelet?" And I was like, "Oh, I got it last year in Hawaii." And it had little, sort of like little totems. And they're like, "You need to take that off because there could be a spiritual thing attached to that, spiritual ties." And I'm like, "Damn, I love that bracelet."
Gotta get rid of it.
And yeah, and got rid of it. Holding you back. Unbelievable. Which
and
is,
did you have a spiritual breakthrough after that?
You know, when I finally did, everything God said to me was very complimentary.
You obeyed me and threw away that, you know, pagan bracelet.
That's it.
But that's what they told me. That's why I got baptized the third and final time, because a pastor told me basically that what was wrong with me spiritually was that I wasn't being obedient to God, and I needed to get baptized a third time. Wow. So I did. I was a youth pastor when I got baptized for the third time. I was like 26, 27 years old. I was already at Bible college. I was a youth pastor, and I went to the pastor, and I'm like, "I got to get baptized." You know, he's like,
"Oh my gosh.
Wait a minute, you're our youth pastor. What are you talking about? You got to get baptized." So he did. We did it in front of the whole youth group in the river down there, you know, outside of Portland, Oregon. And it was a hilarious story, looking back on it now. But I was so sure that I was going to have a big spiritual breakthrough after that.
Yeah.
You know, because I was being obedient to God.
Yeah.
And you were leading by example.
Yep, that's it, too.
And a river scene is always.
Oh, it was all there.
Yeah, better than.
Yep, it was purer than being in a baptistry.
The first time you were baptized, didn't your father do it? And you thought, well, that surely can't be kosher.
Yeah, I was about 10 or 11, and I'd seen that movie, A Thief in the Night, and I was terrified I was going to get left behind in the rapture.
Yep, yep.
And so, yeah, I went to the pastor. What do I need to do to become a Christian? He said, "You got to get baptized." So, yes, my dad did the ceremony. He did the actual baptism. And then about 3 or 4 years later, I got baptized again. And the next pastor, the guy that I was talking to about my problems, he said, "Well, maybe that's what's wrong. Maybe it didn't work because it wasn't done by a pastor. So your dad can't do it. He's not, you know, legitimized by the church. He's not recognized. Oh. I'll do it this time," he said, "by the right formulas and everything. Oh. And then we'll get you, you know, straightened away here." And it didn't work. So I had to do it a third time.
My God.
Wow. Yep. Yeah, but it's really comforting to know that other people had all these doubts.
Oh yeah.
As well. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't talk to a lot of people who don't have the doubts.
We all did.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. Someone said, "Well, the apologetics that we get into convince the believers that what they're believing is true. You know, it's not really for convincing unbelievers, even though that's what they say it's for." Books like Josh McDowell and stuff. It's to help convince Christians that you're right. You're okay. You know, don't worry about it. You know, you're fine.
Yeah. And now, okay. So my other question to you, do you have any good rapture prank stories?
Well, I never pranked anybody, but man, I sure have a rapture story. It ain't funny, but it's funny, I guess, now, but it happened to me when I was about probably 14, 13. I came home and there was nobody home, and I freaked out thinking I'd been left behind. And I've since found out that that's happened to so many people, that kind of thing, as young kids, and they are terrified that they've gotten left behind, especially if you've seen those kind of movies like the Left Behind series or Thief in the Night.
Totally. I did it. I went to school. Of course, you know, these are the days where your parents drop you off, don't care. They don't see anyone. Eh? So
that's okay.
By myself. All there is a payphone. I think I had to ask some janitor. Of course, it's Labor Day. But yeah, I was like, that's it. Oh. Everyone's gone.
Yeah.
And they forgot. But they forgot that there was no choir rehearsal or something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it was school, but it could have been choir rehearsal.
It was Labor Day.
We lived there. We lived.
Forgot the calendar.
That would be about right. Well, we have had some of our favorite episodes are our letter-sodes, where people write in and we read their funny church stories. And there are some hilarious but painful stories. One of my favorite is some girls in a Baptist college, I think it was girls, decided to prank one of their the people on the hall by she was supposed to come over to their dorm, so they just laid out their clothes with the shoes, the pants, like they'd been raptured out of them.
Yep.
And so she went and she was like freaked, but, you know, not too much. So she ran to some other room that they knew she would run to, and that person had done the same. So yep. Then she started screaming and all that. And you're
so
like,
cruel.
Yeah. And then really someone walked down the hallway and she grabbed him and said, "We're not supposed to be here. We're not supposed to be here." No. But yeah.
That's religious trauma syndrome, though. It really
totally.
Is, isn't it? I mean, it's you laugh about it now, but I mean, God, as a kid or a young person, you don't have the capacity to process those traumatic experiences, and it's doing damage psychologically, spiritually, emotionally, that we have to then process years later. It's sad, man. It really is.
We were saying, or I tweeted something about, thinking about all the kids right now, especially who just keep hearing from their parents that these are the end times. Like we all were living through that anyway.
Yep.
We were all saying, "Jesus, don't come back till I get married." We all lived with that thing that Jesus could come any minute, but especially what's going on politically here. I'm sure it's ramped up even more.
Absolutely.
or has it? I mean, this has been going on forever. I liked there was an episode where you were saying that your friend Bob didn't go to college, even though he had a full scholarship, because his dad said, "Oh, it's a waste of time."
Yeah.
Jesus is coming back.
That's right. Don't waste your time, boy.
That breaks my heart. So did you ever get Bob on your show?
You know what? I did talk to him a couple months after that episode with Jeff came out, and we were going to. He's really elusive on social media. Like, you'll message him on Facebook, and he'll get back to you about 6 months later, So he's really hard to get a hold of. So we were supposed to do a chat and sort of give the other side of the story to Jeff, he's hilarious. I mean, I see him every time I go to Seattle, but Bob lives down in San Diego, so I don't really get down there that much anymore. So, yeah, it's a bit harder to see these guys sometimes. But, yeah, I definitely need to try to reach out to him, because he's got an interesting story that kind of goes along with what Jeff was talking about. You've been asking me questions. You talked about our backstories. Why did you start your podcast? That was one of the questions that we were going to kick around.
That's right.
Why did you start your show?
Okay. Bonnie kept bugging me. I didn't want to do it. She's like, "But we have so many funny stories." But, I mean, a lot of our funny stories when we talked were about other people. Like, "Remember the time, blah, blah, did this and blah," But she's like, "We should just do a podcast like Ricky Gervais does," or,
Yeah.
I've been wanting to do a podcast since his came out. And that was so long ago. If we had just figured out a topic that many years ago, we would have been the Joe Rogans.
Hey,
Joe,
you could have been huge.
Talk about, because people love to listen to women, and especially with any authority or whatever. But yeah, so she kept saying that, and I love murder podcasts. And so there's My Favorite Murder, which I really like, by these two comic women. And so we're like, "Well, why don't we do it in that sort of format?" And we began, and it was terrible. Not only our audio, but we tried to make like segments and figure everything out and all that. So it's evolved a lot. But I think once we had people listening to us, because oddly, Bonnie has never revealed who she is, and I haven't posted on social media, like Facebook, that I'm doing this. So all the, quote, listens we were getting, we knew it was people we didn't know. Yeah, so I think that's what started it. Like, oh, there's people that need this or whatever. And you and I, Bonnie hasn't, have been on the Graceful Atheist podcast, mm-hmm. which I really like also.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's great that there's these different niches. And we are dedicated to trying to stay in our lane so people always know what they get when they come to us, you know, and it's definitely just bringing
identity.
Yeah, bringing up the old memories, letting them have a little bit of a release because we know that they're dealing with like straight up difficult things that you're discussing. And, you know, getting inspired with different stories on Graceful Atheist and looking back in their Bible to see what it really means, going back to yours. You know, so I think the more people that get involved in this side of things, the better for people deconverting because there's tons of them and it's going to expand even more if these statistics keep up.
If people keep staying home with COVID. I just want to bust in and say, I think that right before we started, one of the conversations we had was really animated when I was at Starbucks and ran into one of our Sunday school teachers, who was also one of our substitute teachers at day school. And she and I talked, and it was lovely, and it was jovial, and it was so casual. And I was so glad to see her. And I was like, I always did like her. So we both leave Starbucks. I'm going to my car, and across the parking lot, she yells to me, "Are you going to church?" And then why I didn't lie, I'm not sure. But I said, no, I'm not going anywhere here locally. And then she, you know, basically got around to telling me, "I'm going to pray for you." And that just ruffled me for some reason. Like, if you want to pray for me, lady, just do it. Don't tell me you're going to pray for me.
Yeah. And why do you have to say it?
Why do you have to tell me? It's like, I'm going to be praying for you, so I'm going to want you to go to church. And next time we run into each other, I need a different answer.
Yeah, it's not going to work. Yeah. It's so true. It's just the assumption, isn't it? I ran into some guys that I went to high school with in Seattle. One of the times I was there a couple years ago on a Sunday morning, and I walk in to get coffee for everybody, and I was going to bring it back home to my in-laws' house. And here's these three guys sitting at a table, and it turns out they're all three pastors, and they're just going over for a quick cup of coffee before the service starts. You know the story, talking about the service that they're going to preach about, blah, blah, blah. And they're like, "Hey, it's Clint. You know, I haven't seen you in forever. What church are you going to?" That was the first question. Like, really? I mean, okay. So, yeah, it's just an assumption, isn't it, that you're plugged into a church somewhere.
Yeah, it is. And we got that. So I live in the South, and we have daughters. I actually got more than once, you know, when the kids were little and someone you know, was going to come over to play or whatever, parents asking me what church we went to, as that would be the measurement of if their kid could come over and play. And I'll tell you this, both my girls have graduated from high school, one from college so far, and none of them compare to the shithead kids that went to church who were monsters. Monsters.
Ironic, isn't it?
Yeah.
And they're so concerned about you not going to church, and yet their kids are little bastards.
They are. They just always were catty. Or
Karen, they're not perfect. They're just forgiven.
Oh, that's right. Thank you for that.
So
a little Christianese thrown in there.
My great theological comment on that is you've had at least 2,000 years where you now have a direct, through Jesus, pipeline to God, then we should be able to see some kind of manifestation that you are more moral than atheists.
Right.
Like, there should be something.
Yeah. By now, surely.
Yes.
You think you'd have figured it out by now. And that's one of the things I love about your show is that, yes, it's funny and you tell funny stories, but and I guess you're laughing through the tears in some cases, isn't it? Because you go, oh my God, I mean, Christians can be so cruel to each other, You know, yeah. That's the one thing I remember vividly about not just being a pastor, but being a church member for years and years. Just the gossip and the slander and the horrible politics in churches. And it's just vicious at times, you know, and think, God, really? These people are supposed to be plugged into this lifeline of a loving God. And yet right. Some of the worst people I've ever had in my life were my fellow Christians. And they treat people like shit. They treated me like shit as a pastor. Mm-hmm. You know, that's one of the reasons why I walked away. I said, I've never, ever want to have anything to do with Christians again. I'm done with Christians. Yeah. I still want to be a Christian, but I don't want to have anything to do with Christians because some of them are just horrible people. Why is that? You know, it shouldn't make any sense.
Yeah, yeah. There should be one thing where we can go, you know, hey, I want to have what that person's having. And that's what our pastors always said. Live like, you know, that so someone will look at you and say, I want what they have in their life. But the whole concept of, you know, trying to peel back these layers over years that you had to do and I had to do. Did you lose friends? Did you, you know, what was all that? What was the repercussions?
Yeah, I certainly lost family members and friends. Yeah. I mean, we had a huge community. The church that we were plugged into in the UK over here when we first moved, we kind of got roped into going. But then we stayed for about 3.5-4 years because a lot of the people were absolutely wonderful. They really were. They welcomed us in, kind of restored our faith in Christians and humanity a little bit. Because remember, I was saying we came over here, I was completely burned out. I didn't want to have anything to do with church or Christians. But they took us in. They were really loving. They helped us get started, gave us furniture and helped us find a place to live. I mean, they did a lot
for us. That's nice. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, it really was. And so I thought, okay, I might be able to do this. You know, I could actually get back on the horse again. But then when we finally left that church, pretty much everybody ghosted us, except for there's one family, one couple that still occasionally comes and visits us or messages, you know, on Twitter or Facebook, but that's it. All the rest of them have just moved on. And, you know, we were super close to so many people, you know, and I only have one relationship with one sister, my sister Valerie. We're the only ones out of all my sisters that talk to us. My mom and I, we haven't talked in years, you know, so all that's gone. It's done now. And that's the fallout for what you get, I guess, for walking away.
And, you know, again, back to the irony of how unlike who they're supposed to be following.
Yeah.
You know, it's not lost on anyone, but there's always those damn loophole verses that they'll use, you know, don't be yoked with unbelievers, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, I've seen this vitriol even worse with Trump. There's such a demarcation now between especially evangelicals, conservative evangelicals, and how just, again, like you said, they just find shit on everyone now.
Yeah.
And I don't, yeah.
One of my questions is always, like, what do they picture the world like if they're able to get the message to everybody and everybody is part of the church? Yeah. What do they picture life like? Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's why I'm fascinated by this whole thing of dominion theology, why I started getting into it, because the basic storyline is that they believe that Christians should have dominion over the world. They should be in charge, and that is a divine mandate from God himself. And that's what they're working toward with all the political stuff. And so for the last 4 years, they believed that Trump was going to help them achieve dominion. They were going to establish a theocracy. That's what they want. And so you don't want to be living in a theocracy. That's the worst thing. Every time there's been one in history, it's been a horror show. It's been a dystopian existence. And that's what they're looking to accomplish in America and around the world as well. So that's why I'm warning people about what's going on, because these prophets, you know, they're part of that whole movement as well. So hopefully I'm alerting people to what they're doing. It's all part of this dominion sort of mandate that they think they're living out, and Trump's helping them achieve. And so, Trump, yeah, it's crazy stuff.
Yeah. So Trump obviously couldn't care a rat's ass. You know, Bishop, is it Harry Jackson Jr.? So he has his spiritual advisors. You've got Paula Kane, who supposedly helped him become a Christian. And I wrote an article on her for Jezebel when she first started popping up. And because she led the prayer when Trump had his only presidential inauguration. So
unless he gets in 2024.
Well, you know. No.
My
it's
going
to happen. But he, Paula White, then you've got Jackson, and then you have Bonnie and I's former pastor, who is one of Trump's right-hand...
Oh, really?
Yep. Spiritual people.
Showing up at all the super spreader events.
Yeah.
And, good for him. You know, and he blocked me. But, yeah, I asked him, you know, hey, kids are in cages. Anyway, so you have these spiritual leaders. They get their picture taken with them in the Oval Office all the time. This Harry Jackson passed away. We don't know if it was COVID related or what. Trump hasn't said a damn thing. He doesn't care about these people. He does not care. He wanted the votes. They brought him the votes. And that's going to be it.
Well, and he delivered, it was a transactional relationship. So he delivered on his promises, which was to appoint numerous conservative judges on many, many levels of the federal benches, as well as obviously Amy Coney Barrett was the final one. And then he's also delivered on promises like outlawing trans people in the military, you know, stuff like that.
Right.
The Evangelical Advisory Board, they were behind that executive order. You know, so he's delivering on the promises he made to them in exchange for their votes and their support. So it's it's a win-win as they both sides see it.
Well, and he kept saying after, you know, after the numbers started trickling in for Biden, well, like, I'll take this to the Supreme Court. Like, he could just go there and all the people he's stuck in there will go, hey, oh, this will be fine. This will be fine.
Yep. You're the winner. What are you talking about? Throw all this stuff out. Yeah, like you can just go to the Supreme Court. You don't just go.
Show up.
Show up and file your suit. I mean, it's got to work its way up all the levels, and it's being rejected roundly, level by level, state by state. It's a joke. He's lost, 38 cases nationwide?
Yeah, and some are
They've all been
random.
Chucked out.
Yeah. So for your listeners, we've said it on our podcast, so Bonnie and I also grew up in... I wouldn't say walking distance, maybe bike riding if our parents ever let me leave, you know, my driveway.
I'm walking my bike. I'm just walking my bike.
10 miles away from home.
Probably about 2 miles
Not riding.
From Mar-a-Lago. You would cross the bridge. So we lived on the other side of the bridge. I want to make that clear.
The wrong side of the bridge?
Right. Correct. And it used to be owned by the post heiress of the cereal post.
Right, right.
And she had, like, these broken bottles. Remember that, Bonnie?
Yep, she had these big concrete walls, and on the top there were chunks of glass.
Shards of broken glass.
Yeah, so no one would...
Keep the intruders out.
Yep.
Yeah.
So my brother one day had Post Raisin Bran, Annie Portable, and there wasn't a raisin in it. So he thought he's going to write
Mrs.
Brand. Toast.
Yeah. There's supposed to be one raisin per bowl at least.
At least.
He was robbed.
He writes Mrs. Post, and
where's
three
my
weeks
raisin?
Later, she dies. And he, in his child mind, thought he did that. So, of course, I'm
your
like,
letter caused this.
Could you write Trump, please? Write Trump.
Get a hold of your brother, quick.
Yeah. But so there was this whole situation that Trump, he's always suing. And in Palm Beach County, he was always suing. And he actually either formed or became part of this, you know, we don't like noise group of assholes, because he had been trying to sue the Palm Beach International Airport because their flight plan always went over Mar-a-Lago before it turned to go their own direction.
right. over the water.
His guests, right.
Yeah. So he and said it shook the tiles on the roof or right. his dentures. Something was, he was upset. Yeah. He had this multi-million dollar lawsuit that's been going on for 25 years. And he never won it. And someone said, the only way you're not going to have, you know, flights over your house is if it's protected airspace. Well, there's only one way that can happen.
Right. And he has.
It all comes together.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm like, that's a conspiracy or is it? Because he's such an asshole. I don't know. It's not like he knows what he's doing. He, you know, he walked into the White House and didn't know that he needed to bring his own staff and, you know, but
That's his end game. That was his end game all this whole time.
Just to get the flight pattern.
Could be.
So, I'm sure of it.
He dropped that lawsuit, obviously. So, okay.
I've never heard that story.
Back to who you want to punch. Or just who you dislike or whatever. Who are your top three? Let's do everyone. Top three.
Oh, man. My top three. Well, Kenneth Copeland, I think, has risen to the top of the list because the guy's fingerprints are all over all these crazy prophets and prophetic ministries that have been saying all this wacky stuff. I mean, did you catch that whole manic laughter thing that he did?
Yeah.
I mean, that was just...
That was creepy as
disturbing.
Shit.
Disturbing. I mean, it was just horrifying, chilling, you know, and he trying to blow COVID away. And why does this guy still have a voice? I don't understand how he has any credibility left. And yet, there he is. He's got his own private jet, his own private runway, his mega mansion out behind his house. He's got a runway. I mean, come on. Really? He's worth between $300 and $760 million personally. Uh-huh. That's how much money he has in the bank.
And so people are listening. Ministry.
That's what I want to know. Like, so you think, in my mind, I would think he just has his maybe dwindling and aging followers. But maybe. You're saying that, no, he actually is still an influence on others?
Oh, yeah. Because he's got all these, they appear to be like news shows. He's got the Believer's Voice of Victory. He's got, what is it called? Flashpoint. Yeah, Flashpoint.
That's right. Like our youth group names. Impact.
Yeah, and there's another one, America, I want to say America First, but it's something else. But he's got these, they seem like news programs, but they're actually from a Christian point of view. And it turns out they're all part of the Kenneth Copeland Ministries. He's got churches that he has pastors installed in. So he's got this guy, George Pearsons, who's his son-in-law. He's married to his oldest daughter, Terry Copeland, you know. And so this is another church in Texas. I mean, he's got his fingers in so many pies. It's unbelievable how much money he's raking in off of his empire. You know, so he's on the list for sure. He's probably the top one of the top ones.
Yeah.
And then I would say Paula White Kane.
Yeah.
And then Dutch Sheets. Have you heard of him?
No. Oh, I just thought that was like a brand. Yeah.
That's not a product. Like,
right.
It's not a product. Dutch Sheets. Yeah. He's a Seven Mountains Dominion, one of these apostles, prophets. And he, oh my God, I've been following his story. So about a week after the election, maybe less than a week, he decided he needed to take a prophetic trip to the headwaters of the Allegheny River in Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. And he, while the election was still in play in Pennsylvania, and he dug a hole by the riverbank and he buried a bunch of magical items and prayed over it, expecting somehow the effects to flow down the river. I mean, I'm not making this up. Wow, he did this. God. I mean, and he's on YouTube talking about his trips to Pennsylvania and how he was praying and interceding and proclaiming a Trump victory, and he buried all this stuff by the riverbank. I mean, what the hell is going on here, you know?
Yeah.
And then Carl Lentz, I think, is my third one, who's just recently made the list for, you know, I found out he lied to this woman and misrepresented himself, and he sounds like a complete douche in the way he's gone about this, you know. Yeah. He really does. He's an asshole.
Totally.
And yet he's getting away with it. I mean, now this is the thing. They sold their house in New Jersey for $1.5 million, about 10 days before he was officially fired. So that makes me suspicious.
Totally.
That he must have had a heads up.
Oh, for
sure. And now they're living in Southern California, $16,000 a month rental property. They're paying $16,000 a month. So they're living large in SoCal on the beach, and he's not, you know, he's lost his job, but obviously he's not hurting.
Well,
you know, so what a piece
Bieber
of work.
Bieber can just, you know, seriously, yeah. I'm sure Justin Bieber will be like, I've struggled with that too, brother.
You're well, no, Bieber unfriended him.
Did
this
he?
This is the big shock. Yeah.
He's not he a believer.
He unfriended him on Instagram. Shocking.
That's our version.
So, yeah.
Oh, my God. That
may have been his biggest loss as he lost the Bieb.
God.
So Bieber's dumped him, at least for now.
Right.
So that may be his biggest, you know, issue. So those are my top three.
And that's the thing. Like, in Christianity, you do get to revive yourself.
Yeah, sure. He'll lay low for a while.
Yes, yeah. And then you've got a good testimony.
Yeah.
Because Bonnie and I were like, we never had a good testimony, you know?
Yeah.
People getting up like, I have no arms because I did drugs. And you're just like, that's great. And now I want a good testimony. Carl Lentz will have one.
So what's your top three then? What names you come up with?
For Karen, me, it would be Clint Haycock. let's see. I think I've got to put at the top Franklin Graham.
Oh, yeah.
He just has too much influence. Samaritan's Purse. People,
and Christmas boxes.
Yeah. So people, our neighborhood takes that on to do... goodwill by packing these boxes that'll help the homeless or the poor, whatever's happening. And I'm like, anything with an ulterior motive can go fuck itself. Like, even, you know, if I, as an atheist, was going out and saying, here's a toothbrush, but you can't believe in anything. I just don't like that. I don't like it. I think Franklin Graham, because he's so hard into things. Sean Foyt.
Yep.
Is
he's on the list.
It. So I've been going after him. I mean, I'm sure he's really scared of my tweets since I have, you know, so few followers. He's really nervous. But
Just because you're not putting out any commercial product, like singing.
That's right.
Yeah. There you go. So I didn't put him. I've put him in one article that went viral. Hopefully I'll have another article published. And he is such an asshole with his twirly little hair that it just frustrates me beyond all belief. But recently, because for people who don't know, he travels the states in his Airstream, and then does these huge gatherings of unmasked people where they sing his songs over and over. And he thinks that's what the world needs, and that's what America needs, is that we're going against the Constitution by shutting down churches and singing, and this is his way.
When he went to where George Floyd was murdered, that was the biggest one that got me, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Minneapolis, was it? Did a concert on the almost on the spot where George Floyd got murdered by the cops. I mean,
and he did
optics, man. Yeah. Shocking.
And it was so loud that the local DJs who were black doing their own thing in the street stopped. Because he was overpowering the volume.
Blowing them out.
With his long blonde locks. But
dreadlocks.
He was just, in Rolling Stone called him a super spreader. Yeah. So he's now made t-shirts that people can get that's like super spreader for Jesus. And
super spreader for Jesus.
I'm telling you.
So Sean Foyt.
I think.
Who's your third?
Might be a certain pastor who has been radicalized, Jack Graham.
Jack Graham.
He's
no relation to Billy Graham then?
No, believe it or not. Graham is just an unfortunate name. Teddy Grahams them. But he is our former pastor. He's been radicalized. And what he says and what he tweets now is not what we knew. And, you know, I just, I'm going to cuss. I'll pass it on to Bonnie.
It's just money and power.
Yep.
Right. Yep.
He's
celebrity status.
Yeah. My main guy that I find really the saddest is Jerry Falwell Jr. Because, he's just, it's the whole American thing of, oh, my dad established this business. I'm going to go into it. And clearly he's not into the heart of any of the bullshit that they're that they're spreading at Liberty University, like fining kids for breaking the moral codes, when he's clearly more interested in
flaunting it.
And watching his wife have sex with the pool attendant guy. I totally believe that's true. It's just, he's just like, hey, here's another industry where I can make money because it's handed to me on a plate. He just seems like a super phony. By the way, when I was in Miami recently, I drove by the hostel and you wouldn't have a clue that there was a hostel there. It's just, it's this little bungalowy kind of area right next to a parking lot.
And explain for listeners.
Oh yeah.
Okay. The hostel is.
So Jerry and his wife met this pool attendant at the Fontainebleau Hotel, and somehow they struck up a relationship, a friendship, where they always traveled together. And he gave them like some kind of $1 million to invest. And he invested it in a hostel that has a very close proximity to the party scene in Miami Beach, which is a lot of drinking and drugs and LGBTQ population. And so that just goes against everything that Liberty University is about. Mm-hmm. And
Super shady.
Why on earth are you giving somebody you don't know that well that much money?
Yeah, they're just trying to help them out. Come on, they're just being good Christians. That's what they do, isn't it?
Yeah, but it just seems like he wants to live a life other than what he's living, and it's just a way to make money.
And he did.
And he established a football presence at Liberty University, which is just weird. Christians should not play football that well.
Well, and there's so much. Even him getting fired from Liberty was only because they finally buckled under the pressure, but they had been ignoring so many things for so many years. But he ran like a personality cult there. They were afraid of him, sort of like Trump. Him and Trump have a lot of similarities in the way they run their business and their country, you know. They've just bullied people into submission, and they're afraid to speak out. So he got away with murder for years there. He should have been sacked years ago. But anyway, so you got
So Falwell,
just because he's completely phony. I resent the hell out of the fact that Jim Baker is still around.
I love to hate Jim Baker.
Pizza buckets.
I want
a pizza bucket.
I know.
Because does nobody realize he's just selling shit? It's just about the money.
Yep. Colloidal silver and all sorts of bullshit.
So, one of my favorite things, Clint, if you have not watched The Jim Baker Show, where Paula White is on with her husband.
I've seen it.
And singing Don't Stop Believing.
Don't Stop Believing.
Change the words. Wow.
Yep.
Wow.
It's just painful to watch.
I can't get past the fact that they know that they are tricking people who aren't smart.
Yep.
And that makes me angry.
In the name of Jesus.
And
so you got Jim Baker. Who's the third one then?
I'm going to go off a little bit and go with Scott Baio.
What?
Good. Good.
Chachi?
Right.
What did he do?
No, I'm just kidding. I just can't think of a third one. And Scott Baio not being invited to the Happy Days reunion makes me so happy.
Because he's a big, Republican.
Yeah.
Well, take mine, which would be Greg Locke. Like, he's just
he's another one.
Mad at everyone, and I
that's the angry car guy. He'll sit in his car and just videotape himself
ranting in the car.
Right. And I'm so upset that he has so many followers. Like, that kind of thing makes me mad, that people are like, this guy is irate. He said he almost punched the worker at Dunkin' Donuts for wearing a mask, and people are like, I'm going to follow him. I'm like,
yeah, he's the anti-mask pastor who just came out. He had a major affair, didn't he, with his with his assistant? Yeah, well, it was his wife's best friend.
Oh, and it was even his grosser. Assistant.
So he divorced his wife and married the assistant lady he was having. He was having the affair with.
We knew that, but like, I don't know if the affair, you know, has been documented, proven, etc. But it's pretty obvious. Yeah. And then if you saw any pictures, it used to be he and this current wife. And I hate to say, but that current wife always looks scared. Like, she has a scared look.
Wouldn't you be
look.
Scared?
And now it's just
He's
him.
He's an angry, ranting man sitting in his car. And how is this guy a pastor? You know?
I know. Yeah, and he's right near where I am. And I don't know anyone who likes him. So I think it's more of a social media following. Because I don't think his church is that big.
And they're all accounts that he's created.
Exactly.
But he's got a huge Twitter following. I looked at his Twitter feed the other day. Yeah, he's sitting in his car ranting about, we're not going to take this anymore. We're sick to death of, you know, you people, liberal media, and telling us we got to wear masks and all this. And so that's his game, isn't it?
Yep. Just
joke's going to be on him when every elderly person is dead and isn't giving to the Jim Bakers and the Kenneth Copelands of the world anymore.
Yeah.
Who's going to buy his pizza buckets?
Who's going to? I just keep thinking, like, is the new generation that's coming up, you know, what are they going to do? Are they going to get these
a
people?
Lot of them, aren't they?
Yeah.
But are they going to, like, are they going to buy this bullshit anymore?
But that's the thing, you know, look at a guy like Carl Lentz. You know, he was a hipster pastor. That was the thing about him. He was cool. He was hip. He was setting fashion trends. Everybody at Hillsong New York bought the fedora hat that he used to wear. You know, the skinny jeans. I mean, it was ridiculous. They did a whole piece on, I can't remember, Salon, might have been a couple of years ago, about how he's a trendsetter, and all the people that are really on the inside line, they copied his fashion style at the church, and part of it was this hat that he used to wear all the time, you know, and he's gone down in flames apparently at this point. So are these people going to walk out? I don't know. Or are they going to double down? Maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's what is fascinating. And what I was just doing research on recently for something is the people who are leaving church because of their stance on COVID and masks. Mm-hmm. And so you have that. You have, you know, all these charlatans coming out more. But they're all moving to Parler or Parlay, which I've looked in. And it's horrifying. And they are starting to grab on to the QAnon stuff, probably mostly because they know they can ride that
absolutely
insanity.
Well, yeah, we did a bunch of episodes. I did an episode on that. We did a bunch of research on QAnon. It's basically like an updated version of the Satanic Panic back in the 80s. It's just that now you've got the internet, and it's like you say, it's spreading like wildfire among evangelicalism, just like the Satanic Panic did back when I was a kid. I remember, you know, Procter & Gamble. You know, they were the devil because they had a logo on their shampoo and their toothpaste. So the guy with the wizard with the 13 stars, you know.
Yeah, I remember that.
It's just
that
unbelievable.
Too.
You're washing your hair with the devil if you're using Head and Shoulders, you know. Yep. And it's all coming around again. And the evangelicals are one of the biggest spreaders of QAnon now since the lockdown. So that's another thing to keep an eye on.
For sure. Yep.
Yep. Yep. It is.
Well, I
don't know. I keep hoping we learn things, but it doesn't seem to be happening.
No, we're getting dumber. Well, Bonnie, let's make a note to listen to his QAnon ones for our research.
Right.
Mm. We're not joking. That would be helpful. That's a real thing. We're both like, oh, man, we got to dig into that. But, oh, that just seems overwhelming. We don't want to look.
Someone's already done it.
Ah, there we go.
We did it. Yeah, I did it with a friend of mine, Chris Shelton, who's an ex-Scientologist. So we had a really good discussion about it. Yeah, so every time I want to talk about cult-type stuff, I always hit up Chris because he comes out of that. What's interesting about Chris is that even though he's an ex-Scientologist and I'm an ex-evangelical, our backstories are very, very similar as far as the cult sort of piece of how it all worked. Mm-hmm. And that's how we kind of got together originally, was talking about his experiences in Scientology. And I'm like, but that sounds like me growing up in fundamentalist Christianity. Why? But it's not, I wasn't raised a Scientologist. That shouldn't be, but yet it was.
Yeah.
So there you have it.
Yeah. Well, when you mentioned that you hadn't talked to your sisters in years, I thought, well, that's not how it's supposed to be with just, nice Christians.
Yeah, you get shunned and everything. That's straight out of the cult playbook, isn't it?
Right.
Shunning is the last sort of thing. People who leave or get kicked out, they tend to get shunned, and then they're cut off from the community. So, some of my sisters, that's what they did to me because, well, for one thing, my oldest daughter is gay, so that was a big thing. I was like, oh, well, that's it. He's lost because she's lost, Yeah. So that was part of the shunning as well when she came out.
Yeah, and I get that, and I have people I don't talk to in my family who, they changed into the whole Rhema Bible College people.
Mm-hmm.
When my mom was dying, they're like, she is not dying. And I'm like, she's right there. She's
dying.
You need to believe. You don't have enough faith, just that kind of situation. And then you just realize, you don't hear from them again after that. And like, okay, well, I've got that in the family. And your whole essence. I mean, Bonnie had this less, because Bonnie was a heathen in Hollywood. She was working.
And I have a very tiny family.
Oh, right.
Right.
So I sometimes am very grateful for that.
Yeah.
You got lucky there.
You and I, Clint, were, working in the, quote, church, me as a missionary. Yep. So it's like your entire essence is going to be gone. Identity.
Yeah.
Who you are, how your brain works, because you're no longer praying under your breath consistently. Mm-hmm. You're, just your dreams, your... everything you're going to do starts to change, and you have to start, from just one little building block.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't even know what it is sometimes. So.
Exactly. It's a different journey for every person, I think, because, all of our experiences are so different, aren't they? Even though you and I were raised in the church, we have a different journey. But I think you're right. It's educating yourself and figuring out, okay, who do I want to be? My whole identity was totally wrapped up in the religious aspect of everything.
Yeah.
Feeling guilty. I was tweeting this morning about how I used to feel guilty for not evangelizing enough.
Mm-hmm.
It was a constant anxiety of, I've got to tell people about Jesus everywhere I go. My neighbors, my friends, my family, my coworkers. My God, it's just, and I don't have that anymore,
It's so
But it was
funny.
Huge.
Did your mind wander during quiet time? Yeah, all of that.
Watch out.
All of
sinful
that
thoughts.
Stuff. Yeah, yeah. Just constant, guilt. And that's what is so fascinating, watching what the church is doing now, even in its move towards a progressive Christianity,
mm-hmm.
where that can be seen as freedom, but I want to say, no, if you are pledging your life to something or someone, that's just not freedom. It's the bottom line.
They're just trying to keep up with things so they get more people, so they get more money, and they continue, and it's job security.
Bonnie is all about the follow the money. I'm all about the earnestness of our stupidity, so we usually meet in the middle.
Yeah, but the leaders are the evil follow the money ones, and the followers are the, you know, the earnest ones.
Well, money and power too, isn't it? It's the political power. As you said, your ex-pastor, he loves, you know, posing with Trump in the White House, Oval Office, wherever it is. And that is a huge ego stroke. Then he can go back to his congregation and look, I was at the White House this weekend meeting with the president as a pastor. That's huge, man.
Yeah, exactly. But P.S. he's not poor.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
There's money involved too.
Right. Yeah. And that's, you know, exactly. Yeah, Trump is smart because you know that our Southern Baptist pastor does not agree with prosperity gospel preached by Paula White. Paula White doesn't agree with, you know, Franklin Graham, who isn't, you know, trying to heal people of demons. So none of them have any dogma in common except Trump. You know, Trump, he just needs those votes.
And they've set all that aside, in common who are giving them money.
Right, right.
Sorry, I will stop saying the same thing over and over again.
So what's this about money then?
What?
Exactly. Have you downloaded Tithely, Clint?
No, I haven't.
So, yes, it's an app so you can tithe to your church when you're not there.
I will do that.
Yeah, man.
As soon as you finish this podcast episode, I know. I'm on it.
Quickly, let's each say what our favorite episode of our own is so that listeners can maybe look those up if they were interesting or meaningful.
I will start.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay.
I am still always thinking about the people from Oregon or who bought property in Oregon and followed the Indian guru guy and the they're called the Rajneeshpuram.
Right.
Yeah.
I remember that Antelope, Oregon.
Yeah.
And because it was this dumb property that really wasn't used, and it kind of made sense on a small level to me. Like, that's how it starts. You start buying property, and then you have rights, and then you buy the sheriff department or the police department, and then you start running for government. And, oh, guess what? Half the people there are in your cult, so they're going to vote for you. And then it just builds and builds and builds. And then that whole idea that they were accused or convicted, I'm not sure which one, of poisoning the local salad bars.
In the Dalles, Oregon. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They put like E. coli in the salad bars.
Yeah. Yeah. That they hid in their sleeves and they dumped it into like taco sauce. I mean, to me also in the being a fan of true crime, I always think, well, that is a crime that not enough people have gotten, you know, the idea to do. And I wonder why, because there's so many salad bars and public.
It's too easy. Now you did it. You just gave everyone ideas.
There's the idea. But I think one of the main reasons that one stuck with me is because I am absolutely convinced that there's a woman in that documentary. It's a 6-part documentary, and I can't remember what it's called right now.
Wild, Wild Country.
It's on Netflix.
That's the one. Yes.
Yeah, I watched it.
There's a woman in there that I am convinced is a client of mine, and there's absolutely no good way to say to a client, hey, by the way, were you in a cult in Oregon?
Poison a salad bar?
That's right. Do you like salad?
So let's go to salad.
Yeah.
Let me check your sleeves first.
So, you know, I don't know at what point I'm going to be able to find this out, but I've got to figure out a way. Like, maybe not she'll get angry at us and fire us.
Yeah. Right.
And I'll be like, hey, wait, before you go.
What number episode do you know?
That was episode number 24.
And I was a missionary in India and actually toured the ashram when they left and were in India.
Yeah.
And it was crazy.
Yeah. And I love that you got to tell me that, because before you had probably told me that and I was like, blah, blah, India. I have no idea what was going on there. So
now
it really
suddenly important.
Yeah. It was like, it was nice to have the stories.
Yeah.
You know,
and
from so many years back.
We lived around the people, and I mean, they looked drugged out, but they weren't. They were just all spacey walking around. And
maybe they were happy.
I guess they were blissful.
Yeah. That cult stare, isn't it? But, you know, back on your point about Antelope, Oregon, though, Bonnie, do you think about, that's basically what Bethel Redding has done to the town of Redding.
You read my mind. I'm like,
so that's, I was just going to say that. Yeah. That's exactly, they're moving into the political sector. They've basically taken over that town. People are afraid to speak out against the church, because people who aren't involved in the church, because they have so much power in that city. Mm-hmm. So it's a cult that's operating out of Redding, California.
I totally agree. Yep. Okay, my favorite episode, and Bonnie and I are realizing this now, is also a cult one. We did an episode in July, I think it's number 74, called Jesus 2.0, about the man in Siberia who claims to be Jesus.
Oh, yeah.
He is now in prison, but...
What? I'm shocked.
I know, and... I'm going to shock you more. It had to do with sex.
Cult leaders always end up doing so well, yeah, typically.
It had to do with sex, which...
I can't believe that either.
That, yep. So I am fascinated with that. And I think it does go back. One, the houses that they lived in and built were adorable. So I do love that part. But it goes back to, how does this start? And how do I get into this business? How do people follow you up to the point that you're like, you can only drink juice, not water? If you can't afford juice, drink your urine. Like, where is it in your mind that is like, I've bought into everything, I'm buying into that? I don't.
Absolutely.
Fascinating.
It's the cult psychology. I'm fascinated by it, too. That you find people doing the craziest stuff, but it's a long progression, isn't it? They don't come in on day one and say, okay, you're joining a cult and you're going to be drinking your own urine.
Right,
tomorrow.
Right, right.
You know,
it's a process.
It's a very long progression. Yeah, breaking them down and establishing mind control and undue influence and all the stuff that goes on inside of cults, isn't it?
But who was the guy who was telling your friend Jeff something like, I'm going to sell God? And then sure enough, he decided to, and now he's making a lot of money and doing it.
Casey Treat. Yeah, he's got a big mega church in Seattle. He started at the high school that I went to, the Christian high school, in the gymnasium. And he's a mega, mega prosperity gospel guy out of Seattle.
But he physically said, or he literally said to your friend, I'm going to sell God.
Yeah. Hey, kid.
Hey, kid.
Wow.
You want to know how to make a bunch of money? Sell God.
Yep. I know. Absolutely true. That's, we're now seeing so much more of that cult-like following as we see the evangelical church turn towards this Trumpist dominionism stuff, even
it's
in
a
the
cult of personality.
Well, and that HBO documentary told us how to get started, you know, the Keith Raniere thing, Nexium.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So now we all have a playbook.
That's right. I'm starting it. So what is your favorite, most fascinating thing you did for your podcast?
Well, I think one of my favorite episodes, probably not still my favorite one, is the one that I did with my sister Valerie going back about 3 years ago now. I think it's number 45. You can find them, the archive ones, either on my website or on my Podbean feed. I've got all the older episodes in there. But we talked
about
growing up in a...
And it's on Spotify.
It is on Spotify as well, but I don't know if it has the older episodes, but... That episode, I still get people who listen to that episode and say that it brings them to tears, because hearing my sister's story about having to give her baby up for adoption, it's just my parents were just cruel, just absolutely cruel in the way the whole thing went down, all in a Christian context, supposedly loving context, you know, forcing her to give up her baby, and how she's slowly over the decades really rebuilt her life. That was a shattering experience, you know, and it's a really powerful story. So that's probably one of my top all-time favorite ones that I've ever done.
It's so good. That one broke my heart. There's absolutely nothing funny about it, and I loved how honest she was and how she was able to talk to you about it, and that was really brave, I think, of both of you.
And Bonnie was telling me about it, and I haven't listened yet. I will, you know, get in tears about it, I'm sure. Yeah. But the details, you know, it is fascinating And so, you know, we can hear these stories that are so foreign, yet we grow up and almost all of us know of someone, you know, mm-hmm. who had to go through these terrible things.
Yeah. Yes. So that happened with parents. People we know. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And now it gives me a little bit more of an idea of what they were going through.
Yeah. Well, and that's why I think it's so important to find help with religious trauma syndrome. I've done a bunch of episodes with people like Dr. Marlene Winnell and other people who are experts on RTS. And I think that's hugely important because, first of all, you got to identify what the traumas have been in your life, religious trauma specifically, and then you've got to work through that. And you, some people really need therapy and counseling. I mean, mm-hmm. I've had it.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, you need to bounce it off someone who knows how to process it, how you, you know, how to help you process through it, I guess is what I'm trying to say. So it's really important for some people to get therapy.
Do you have, because I'm still doing our website, but that's one thing I want to put up is resources. I know that there's a like religious institute of therapy, or I said that all wrong. I know a few therapists I've connected with on social media and the deconversion thing. Do you have any resources if people are looking for that on your website?
Not on the website, but I would say one of the best ones is the Recovering From Religion. So the RFR, I think it's rfr.org. I think that's the website. Because they can, and this, the Secular Therapy Project, that's another part of the okay. RFR. Because if you need a therapist, they can find you one who'll meet you, you know, online, Zoom, Skype call, whatever. If you're in Oklahoma and they're in South Africa, it doesn't matter. Nowadays, we can just do a Zoom call or a Skype call.
Right.
You know, so they put people in touch. And the RFR, they have support groups and counselors for people who are struggling and coming out of religion, recovering from religion is exactly what it sounds like. And so my friend, I've got a friend who hosts a group, I think every Saturday night, just, you know, 5, 6, 7 people. They just meet on Zoom every Saturday, and they're just a support group as part of this RFR group.
That's cool.
I have recommended the Clergy Project some people. That's for definitely for people still in or maybe after who were pastors or any kind of minister who lost their faith, because a lot of them come out and they have nothing that they feel they can do either. They don't have training for anything else.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, a lot of people have no skills, do they? Marketable skills.
Right.
Yeah, well, that was something I noticed in the entertainment industry, too. They hang on to those jobs, you know, with all their might, because what can you do? You can't take your background in entertainment and go, I'm going to go work in Missouri in entertainment. Yeah. No, you're not.
Unless it's in Branson. Hey. There's one place they might get a gig, you know.
Oh, man. Talk about Jim Baker. Yeah.
Right on.
But, yeah, that's very true, you know, that they're just are people, and they need help, in whether they're clergy, and especially my heart breaks for these kids who are LGBT, who are getting kicked out of their houses younger than they should be. Can you know, maneuver the world.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
They're getting booted out on the streets because their parents can't handle it. Yeah. It happens a lot in the Mormon community as well, from what I understand.
Wow.
Because officially their doctrine is, you know, a gay person cannot go to heaven. And so these kids are growing up in these Mormon households, and they're hearing this doctrine, and they're like, kids have committed suicide within the LDS church.
Mm.
Gay teens. I mean, that is just unbelievably sad and traumatic, isn't it?
It's
heartbreaking.
And we've had a lot of ministers, you know, we've seen big name ones. I knew of a youth minister where I am, you know, committing suicide. And in the back of my mind, I'm always, were they struggling with guilt of porn addiction, LGBT, you know, those main ones that really make them feel distant.
You have to keep it a secret.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
Living a double life, you know. It's
totally.
Sad.
Yeah. That's well, this has been great talking to you. I'm sure you feel the same.
Yes. Thank you for that.
Oh, doubt it, but it really, it's great to have someone else, you know, that's doing such good work that we can point people to and be like, you know, look at his library of things that he's recorded that might resonate with what you're going through or worried about or need to know more about.
Yeah.
Yeah. And are not as, and are more of a deep dive into serious issues.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Well, and that's something if people want to subscribe to my YouTube channel as well, because I've recently been organizing it into categories like playlists. So I'm trying to put episodes in what I think they fit in terms of categories. So if you want to find, I need to talk about religious trauma syndrome or cult education, you can just go to that playlist and that's easier to find instead of scrolling through, you know, a couple hundred episodes from the past. So I think I'm going to keep doing that and try to get that more and more organized.
Yeah, give us all the places people can find you.
The best way, you can follow me on Twitter at MindShift2018. You can also look up the MindShift Podcast Facebook page, or you can go on YouTube and look up MindShift Podcast and subscribe to my channel.
Very nice. Cool. Will do. And we're most often on Instagram. That seems to resonate. Deconversion Therapy. You just type that into Twitter, too. And then Facebook, we have, you can follow the podcast, but you can join the community. And we sort of screen it. You have to answer questions because we don't want to have people sneaking in, making our members feel bad about themselves. Yep. So
it's got to be a safe place, isn't it?
I can't believe I'm a member of a dog group on Facebook and people go in there and shit on people. I'm like, you guys.
Really?
It's a dog Facebook group.
I know. Yep. Politics, man. Everywhere, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Trolling.
So that's great. I think, you know, people go find all the places that you're at and subscribe because I really like the work that you're doing and appreciate it. Though I'm bummed that you're not, you don't have a British accent because my British accent is so good.
Spot on. And my daughter does though. She's really interesting. So,
oh, that's cute.
Yeah. She's picked it up over the years, but she was only like 10 or 11 when we moved here. So yeah, she's picked it up a lot, but none of the rest of us have one.
Yeah, you don't at all. You didn't. No. You didn't go Madonna.
I didn't, but I have a lot of the. I use a lot of the British slang, though. Yeah. That's the thing. I notice that when I go back to the States, I'll use a lot of British slang, and people will be like, "What are you talking about?" What they don't know because that's just how we speak here, you know. So, I find it funny when I go back and people don't know the British slang as opposed to the American slang.
Right. Yeah.
My husband's Australian, lived in Australia. And so I have to ask, when you were going to church in the UK, did they do those weird coffee breaks?
Coffee breaks?
I mean, during church?
No, we did them after, like typical church. You know, you sit in the back and you have your fellowship time.
And you just stand around awkwardly with cups of coffee. Do. Yeah. Yep,
that's the one.
Yeah, like Mr. Bean. That's what it always, you know, ill-fitting suits. Getting your sugar cube. Yeah, Australia did that too. But they would sometimes break. They would like do singing and then break.
All right.
And they go back to church?
You just go in the big like hall and then you go back and sit in church. I guess you could escape then.
That's so. That's I was going to say that so people can leave early.
Yeah. I could duck out the back door.
Exactly. Didn't think of that. Amazing.
We have to definitely do this again, though, sometime in the future.
Yeah, let's find one person, and we both can just take them down.
I'm sure nobody will do anything.
Bonnie and I will just hurl insults while you do all the heavy lifting.
Sounds like a plan.
Okay.
I'm in.
Let's do it, and we'll see everyone next week.
Good talk.
All right, thanks, ladies. We'll see you again.
Thanks. Yeah.